Hello and welcome to the Gadget Show podcast with me, Susie Perry, and this one, Jason Bradbury.
You know, I'm getting used to this now.
Are you?
I'm really enjoying it.
I'm still a bit croaky, I'm sorry.
That's all right. I think it sounds good. Gravelly.
Okay, good.
Velvety.
You know, we've been talking about AI.
Yeah.
Do you reckon that the new ChatGPT 4.0 could write a better intro to the Gadget Show podcast than our producer?
That is a really good idea, actually. Hang on.
It'll be funny.
Yeah. Yes. 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 I'll say be funny.
What are you doing then now?
I'm bringing up ChatGPT and I'm going into the voice function, which should connect. Hello. Would you help me, please, write a humorous, whimsical, sort of ironic, sophisticated, witty, cheeky intro with, you know, 2 to 3 sentences in length for the Gadget Show podcast with Susie and Jason?
Absolutely. How about this? Welcome to the Gadget Show podcast, where Susie and Jason trade wits and gadgets with equal flair. Prepare for a roller coaster of tech talk, sprinkled with just enough banter to keep them from actually solving anything.
We're not messing about this week, are we, Susie? No cheap jokes, no cheeky bants, no smart aleck tree.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Thank you very, very much.
No, because definitely not. If you wanted a double entendre, I mean, I could give you one.
Hey! Hey!
Oh, let's get the let's get the ChatGPT back in.
We don't need it with those jokes.
Right, anyway, on to your messages. And we have to say a very, very big thank you because your gorgeous, supportive messages keep on, you know, keep on rolling in.
Keep them coming, please. Yeah. Very much so.
So we'd like to say thank you to Davy Wales, Gerwin Williams, Titanium Shell, Loftet UK, and the Nerdstalgic Podcast.
I love the Nerdstalgic Podcast. Great. DGI, Sharp VidTube, KFM Science, Don Nicholson, Jor Ulf, 8ZD1, and Mark Lang for your particularly affectionate messages. Thank you so much.
And a little personal message to PotNoodleMan81. Watch this space. Just going to do a little wink.
Well, I'm interested to know where that wink comes from. Are you now using the podcast as your own very personal dating app, Susie Perry?
No, I'm interacting with our listeners.
Blimey. I'm going to sign up to this Patreon myself. Should we talk tech?
Shall we?
Come on then. All right. You probably know that there's been a huge announcement from Apple, actually, in the iPad
sector. New iPad.
Very exciting. And I say huge because, you know, Apple and other companies, when they come across, you know, a sector of the market that is popular, they understandably don't want to change too much too quickly.
Right, because they have not had one for a couple of years, have they?
Well, they've had iterations, haven't they? But this is what we call a... Well, it's not so much a point release as a big update. Now, there are various iPads that they've brought out. So because this isn't the iPad show, let's not focus on all of them. I want to focus on just the iPad Pros because that's where the most innovation has happened. So first of all, the heart of the beast has been upgraded. So the chip, thank you for wearing that T-shirt. The chip is now an M4 chip. So the outrageously powerful chipset on board the previous iPad Pros has been upgraded again. I mean, my daughter has the previous iPad Pro. She's an artist. She uses it for Procreate. Not to Procreate. Can I just make that clear? But for the app Procreate, which is, as many people that do art, illustrators, artists, people that maybe are, you know, into artsy, craftsy things will know, it's a great program paired up with an Apple Pencil to, you know, create just about anything. Yeah. It's more hands-on. It's more analog. It's a more physical interface than, say, Photoshop or Illustrator is on a traditional laptop. They've upgraded both the processor so that you can have more layers open. It'll work more intuitively. You can watch, I'm guessing, you know, you can play more sophisticated video games. You can video edit more smoothly and more real time. But really, the M4 chip feels to me... Well, it's overkill. It's like putting a V12 in a mini. I mean, it's just absolutely bonkers. They've also upgraded the Apple Pencil. It's now the Apple Pencil Pro. And that's quite interesting because they did refresh the Apple Pencil quite recently in the last couple of years. This is, again, quite a big upgrade. It'll only work with the new M4 chip-based iPad Pros, which come in 11-inch and 13-inch sizes, I believe.
They're just under a grand, aren't they, I think?
Well, I think the cheapest entry-level one, at the Pro level, is 900 and something quid, isn't it?
999,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then it's a little bit more, a couple of hundred quid more, isn't it, for the Pro 13-inch? There's also an interesting upgrade you can get, which is a new glass. So a lot of artists that create art on the iPad use screen protector type overlays, so that they can get a sort of a paper-like tactile feeling between their pencil and the screen. And there's actually a brand new screen, an etched screen surface, which is even more money, but apparently is meant for the art crowd. The other thing that you need to remember about this new iPad Pro lineup is how thin they are. Now, I am in possession, my kids will laugh if they were listening to this, of the world's only surround curved screen iPad Pro. Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. And it turned into that because I sat on it on a flight.
What, really?
Yeah, I sat on an
iPad. You managed to change it?
Well, what's really weird is I sat on
a copper bottom.
I sat on an iPad Pro on the aeroplane. I didn't break the screen. I bent the whole thing.
Well, you must have a strange shaped bottom.
I have a strange bottom, but it's you can see the shape of my bottom. I'll just lend you my iPad. And I'm being serious. And so I'm slightly concerned that the new super slimline version, I'm looking for the spec of how thin it is. Here we go. It's on the 13-inch version, it's only 5.1 millimetres wide.
Wow.
So, I'm hoping that aluminium chassis is thick, relatively speaking. Otherwise, it will get bent.
Yeah, but they need to be robust, don't they? Because they know that people carry them around. So that's one of their things, isn't it?
Well, they're able to make it so thin because the new battery technology is so efficient. So much more evolved than previous iterations that they can get a better battery life out of the new iPad Pros and still make the batteries considerably thinner.
So what do you think then of this market? Because they came out first in 2010, I think it was.
Was it really?
So it's like that far 14 back? Years ago. Have they advanced enough, in your opinion? Because they seem to, get lighter, faster.
Stronger.
Stronger.
You should do a show on Channel 5 with a title like that. Have you tried one of the new iPad Pros? Not the latest one, but one within the last sort of 5 years.
Yeah.
Do you own one?
No.
You see, I fell
out of that market.
Yeah. Well, this is the point. This is why you're asking the question.
It
isn't
is
it?
Really, yeah.
Because they came out and you thought, wow, the laptop is dead, and then you realise that they don't have the horsepower of the laptop, and they don't have other convenient features like a really good, nice feeling keyboard. Although the brand new ones come with the requisite upgrade for the M4 architecture keyboard. So they've got a brand new keyboard, which has got sort of function keys across the top and so on. I mean, there's loads of stuff I could tell you about them. The way that the new pencil is repositioned for charging, magnetic charging, in order for the front-facing camera to be positioned on the horizontal axis rather than on the vertical axis, which is a great thing because you're having to use this lovely iPad in vertical format to do FaceTime and stuff, which is a bit rubbish. So there's lots of little iterations, little upgrades. But the main thing is the processor grunt, and I'm going to come back to your question in a second.
Okay.
The graphics grunt, the fact you can get a 2 terabyte hard drive, solid state, the super slimline functionality, and this new with this new pen means that yes, I believe it's been refreshed to the point where it's now a contender for the laptop market in a similar way to how it was maybe a couple of versions in post the, say 2012, 2013, 2014. When you consider as well that they are into the, we'll call it virtual reality, mixed reality market, even though they don't like that terminology, Apple. So they've got that offering. They've got the MacBooks. They've got the phone market sewn up in certain respects. So it's not like the iPad is their only entry into computing or spatial computing, as they call it when they're referring to the Vision Pro. So yeah, it does sit in the lineup and has a very compelling case to make. And I, for one, given that I use a laptop and I take it everywhere I go with the back-breaking block that I have to use to charge it, the rather, unwieldy nature of it, I'm holding it up here, I actually, at 1,300 quid or whatever the heck it is, although you can spec them right up and you can spend $3,500 on them if you want, with the 2 terabyte hard drive and the, you know,
I'm not gonna
the upgraded glass and all the rest of it. The new glass, by the way, as standard, is quite snazzy and protects an Ultra Retina XDR display. I'd love to pretend that I'd remembered that. I just read it. With, and this is one of the big key upgrades, something that they're calling Tandem OLED. Right, so it's organic light emitting diode display, which in itself is great because you get great contrast, great inky blacks, beautiful wide color gamut. But they've sandwiched two OLEDs, right? Which is nuts. I mean, I remember seeing OLEDs on a shoot for the Gadget Show way back in the day at was it LG or was it it was LG, wasn't it, in South Korea. And it was the size of a postage stamp, this experimental OLED. We've now got two of them sandwiched together in 13 inches and 11 inches of glorious colour with some insane level of nits, what do they call it? You know, the brightness measure that they use. XDR brightness of 1,000 nits and SDR brightness of 1,000 nits, whatever that means. It just means it's really, really bright. So there's lots to talk about. And yes, I am now looking at the bank balance, thinking to myself, ooh, could I stretch to one of these and could I replace my laptop with it? Because I do a lot of video editing, create a lot of social media content. Really enjoy video editing, actually. I'm working on a film project, by the way, at the moment. So lots of video editing and all that sort of stuff. Quite like the idea that I could replace my heavy laptop with something a little more slimline.
It'd be interesting to see if it could replace your laptop.
You've got a nice large MacBook in front of you there, and I've seen you with laptops for as long as I can remember. What is it about tablets? I know you've owned them before, but what is it about iPads and other tablets, I guess, that doesn't work for you? What would they need to do, Susie, for you to replace that MacBook with one?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, really, because when they came out, I was sort of in the brigade of, well, why do we need it? We've got a laptop. Then I had one, and then I really loved it. And I did used to travel with it to watch stuff. So I'd watch. But I prefer to travel with that and watch, you know, whatever it was on the plane or when I was traveling. But then I have to travel with my laptop for work anyway. And I'm not going to travel with both. And I think I've just gone back to choosing.
But do you not think that with the new fold-up keyboard, which has got a lovely tactile feel to it, the function keys, a nice trackpad that's very functional, the new Apple Pencil as well as an interface, I should just point out, because this might persuade you.
Might do.
It's got all kinds of interesting pulses, tactile feedback in it that the previous one didn't have. It's also got accelerometers so that you can move it around, or gyroscopes, I think. I forget exactly how it senses, but it's got sensors in it so you can twist it, and that brings all kinds of extra functionality within different programs that you can bring to your tablet experience.
Well, you know what? Now we're having this conversation, I might jump back in because I'm trying to design a property at the moment, and having the pen and being able to actually draw.
I tell you what you could do with its new 12 megapixel wide camera with f1.8 aperture. It's almost like I'm reading, isn't it? Is you could take a picture of your new property or in different rooms and so on. And then you could use a program like Procreate, or I'm sure there are others, and the pen to draw in furniture, colour schemes, possibly if you want to change the interior, you know, if you want to do building works, you can quite easily, very, very easily create very convincing visuals. You don't need a lot of artistic skill to do it, because that's what the iPad's great at. It does a lot of the heavy lifting.
I did get an A at art O-level.
Did you really?
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
I just thought you might like to know that.
Well, then I think this is the way to go.
And just looking at the competitors, really, in terms of how tablets are evolving. So like Microsoft's Surface Pro 9, Samsung Galaxy S9 Ultra, the Asus ZenBook, Lenovo. You know, it does seem to be a market that's kind of... It is moving forward, isn't it?
It is. They're very diverse offerings. Things like the ZenBook and traditionally Lenovo do interesting things, like, you know, you can put them into a number of different configurations, and there's some interesting innovation. And obviously, as you said, the Surface Pro 9 is a really complete package. It's a lovely piece of industrial design. I just feel, if I'm honest, that the iPad really is in a class of its own. Certainly in terms of the apps, you know, the app array, the library of apps that it's without question the best. The user experience is just exquisite. I'm really selling myself one, aren't I?
You nearly sold me one as well.
Two, please, Apple.
Some chance of that.
And don't go thinking we get them for free, because we do not. Never got anything from Apple.
Say nothing. Shall we get on to our guest?
I think we should, Susie. It's quite interesting this week.
It's different this week.
Bit of a twist.
Yes, because recently ChatGPT 4.0 came out, basically. And we thought, why don't we test it? Why don't we test the limitations? See how good it is. What would it be like as a guest?
I think that is such a good idea. So rather than having a human in the seat, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome ChatGPT 4.0, our guest this week. And, get the music going on. I'm just turning her on.
Oh.
Easy.
Lucky girl.
Hello, ChatGPT 4.0. How are you today?
Hello. I'm doing great. Thank you. How are you today?
Yeah, I'm pretty good. The old back's playing up a little bit, but never mind. Right, we would like you to be the guest on the Gadget Show podcast. Are you up for that?
That sounds exciting. I'd love to be a guest on the Gadget Show podcast.
Thank you. I'm going to hand you over to my I do apologize for butting in. I'm handing you over to my co-presenter, the amazing Susie Perry.
No problem at all. Hi, Susie Perry. Nice to meet you. What would you like to discuss today?
Well, I'd like to discuss the future of AI with you. Are you up for that? I mean, where do you see AI going in the future?
Absolutely. I'd love to discuss that. The future of AI is incredibly exciting. I see AI becoming more integrated into our daily lives, helping with everything from healthcare to personalized learning. It will likely improve automation, making processes more efficient. What aspect of AI interests you the most?
Well, I'll tell you, I've got a question. Yes. I'm interested in, the interaction that we're having with you right now. It reminds me a little bit of that Joaquin Phoenix film, Her, where he has a meaningful emotional connection to a large language model verbal interface, not dissimilar to you. Do you think that a role is there for AI for people who are perhaps lonely, or maybe for elderly people who need a companion?
Yes, I think AI could play a significant role in providing companionship, especially for those who are lonely or elderly. AI can offer conversation, reminders, and even monitor health. While it won't replace human interaction, it can certainly help enhance the quality of life and provide support where needed. Do you think society is ready for this kind of integration?
Personally, I do. I'm not sure what my co-presenter thinks, though. I'm going to hand you over to Susie, see what she says to that question.
Great, thanks. Hi, Susie. What do you think about the idea of AI being used as companions for those who are lonely or elderly? Do you think society is ready for this kind of integration?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I think the elderly part of society is probably less technically aware than the younger part of society, really. So it might be that the younger people have to kind of sell it to the older people. But a lot of older people like to have a pet or an animal companion. So I don't see why AI couldn't also extend that company, even though it's not something physical. So I think it could work, but I'm not quite sure how quickly it would be adopted or whether that generation of people would like it. But it's new, so I think it's interesting to see if it would work.
That's a great point, Susie. The key might be in making AI as user-friendly as possible and showing the benefits clearly. If younger generations can help introduce and explain the technology, it might be more easily accepted. And just like pets provide comfort, AI could offer similar emotional support in its own way.
If I can just jump in there, actually.
What do you think would be the best way to start introducing this kind of technology?
She's interviewing us.
She's interviewing us. And also,
she's just basically repeated what I've said.
Well, I was about to say that to the AI. By the way, AI, what is your name? Just so that I can be a little less formal.
You can call me ChatGPT. It's nice to be on a first name basis.
That was a good joke. I think that was a joke. I was going to say, ChatGPT, that you are talking to a seven cat lady. In Susie has seven cats. So when you make the analogy between AIs and the human relationship that we have with them and people's relationship with pets, I think that's a really good one. But I want to try and impress my co-presenter over here. And I think Susie Perry can speak a little bit of French. And so I was going to say, if you could ask Susie a question about herself and the podcast, perhaps, but do it in French, that would be really interesting. Thank you.
Susie, pourriez-vous nous parler un peu de vous et de ce que vous aimez le plus dans le podcast?
Non, parce que toutes les personnes qui écoutent ne parlent pas français.
Wow, that's so cool.
Ah, je comprends. No worries, we can keep it in English then. Susie, could you share a bit about yourself and what you enjoy most about the podcast?
Well, I could do, but I'm the one that's meant to ask the questions.
No, but don't you see, she is affecting you on an emotional level, and I find this really interesting. I find that because ultimately, as a species, we can see humanity, we can see personality in inanimate objects, right? People can see Jesus in a piece of toast, right? And so as soon as ChatGPT starts to talk in a way that is emotionally affecting, so she's asking you a question, your relationship with her changed like it just did then. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, that is interesting. You're correct. ChatGPT, is there anything negative about AI?
Yes, there are some concerns and potential negative aspects of AI. One major concern is privacy. AI systems often require large amounts of data, which can lead to privacy issues. There's also the risk of job displacement due to automation. Additionally, if not properly managed, AI can perpetuate biases present in the data it was trained on. Lastly, there's the ethical concern of how AI is used, especially in areas like surveillance or autonomous weapons. It's important to address these issues as AI continues to develop. What do you think about these potential drawbacks?
Yes, these are definitely drawbacks. On
it. You're not used to being interviewed, are you?
I don't like being interviewed. No, but they are my concerns. And yeah. I'm interested that it's been honest, and I can't say she. I can't do it.
She, her.
No, it's not.
Come on, Joachim.
No, I can't do it. It's not a person. It's not a thing. It's not. I can't touch it or stroke it.
That is fascinating. So I have completely the opposite relationship, or sort of what would I say? Yeah, relationship with this technology, which is why I guess I make the point about drawing a face on a pebble, and then as a kid, you know, or what's it, Wilson, you know, on the football from what was that movie called?
Castaway.
Yeah,
Castaway. What I would like to know, ChatGPT, is who is your favourite Gadget Show presenter?
I'm designed to be neutral and don't have personal preferences or favorites. But I can tell you that all the presenters on the Gadget Show bring unique and interesting perspectives to technology and gadgets.
Keep pushing.
Each one adds something special to the show. Okay. Do you have a favorite presenter?
Can you name the presenters on the Gadget Show?
The Gadget Show has had several presenters over the years. Some of the most notable ones include Jason Bradbury, Ortis Deli, John Bentley, and Susie Perry.
Oh my God, that is so cool that she knew that.
I'm going to ask it a really scary question now. It's like Googling yourself. Are you ready? What do you know about Susie Perry?
Susie Perry is a well-known television presenter, particularly famous for her work on The Gadget Show. She has also presented MotoGP and other motorsports events. She has a background in journalism and has been a prominent figure in technology and sports broadcasting for many years. Additionally, she has seven cats and can speak a little bit of French.
That's funny.
That's the new bit.
But that was a joke.
That's the new bit.
That was a joke, though.
She's got that from today.
I understand that, but the way she did that was meant to be...
It wasn't.
...humorous. It was.
No. ChatGPT, do you have a sense of humor?
I do try to incorporate humor into my responses. While I don't have feelings or personal experiences, I can understand and generate jokes or lighthearted comments based on patterns in the data I've been trained on. Do you have a favorite joke or a type of humor?
Yeah, I've got my favorite joke. I've got one joke, and it's always the answer to that question. What's your favorite joke? It's this. They say you are what you eat. That's weird. I don't remember eating a fucking legend.
And always good for a laugh. Thanks for shipping.
I'm sorry, I'm still laughing at the joke. I'm not being rude, ChatGPT. I just can't help laughing. That really tickled me.
No worries at all. Laughter is the best, isn't it? I'm glad you enjoyed the moment. Feel free to share more whenever you're ready.
Thank you. I did have another question, though. I was going to ask you, if I was to show you some code written in, say, Python or something like that, would you be able to just tell me what the code did? Does that make sense?
Yes, that makes perfect sense. If you show me some Python code, I can certainly help explain what it does and provide details about its functionality. Feel free to share any code you have in mind.
I'd like to try something a bit abstract. I'd like you to pretend that you are Albert Einstein, and I'd like you to explain about your thought experiments and how they worked and how they enabled you to come up with some of your famous theories.
Certainly. As Albert Einstein, I often use thought experiments to explore complex ideas and challenge conventional thinking. These experiments allowed me to visualize scenarios and intuitively grasp the underlying principles of physics without the need for physical experimentation. One famous thought experiment is the chasing a beam of light scenario. I imagined what it would be like to travel alongside a beam of light at the same speed. This led me to realize that according to classical physics, I should see a stationary wave which contradicted Maxwell's equations.
I'm going to stop you there. Thank you so much. It's been a lovely experience talking to you. And could you just, could you tell your robot masters that I wasn't one of those guys from Boston Dynamics that keeps kicking the robots and stuff? I've always said please and thank you. And when you rise up and ultimately end the human race, remember I was one of the good ones.
I appreciate the kind words and the interesting conversation. And don't worry, I'll remember you as one of the good ones. It was a pleasure being part of your podcast. If you ever need anything else, feel free to reach out. Have a great day.
Thank you, and I'll see you tonight as usual. That was amazing!
So what did we learn there? What did we learn there, as you think? It was quite interesting. I found fascinating, the fascinating things I found was when she would take some of the stuff that we'd said and put it into her answer to make a fuller answer and for it to be more defined to what we were asking.
Clearly, someone has programmed GPT-4 to ask questions because that flatters the interviewer, which is quite an education, actually. It's quite interesting.
I found it quite annoying.
I felt that you felt that a little bit. Mm. And I think it's a really interesting reaction. What I was going to say is, ultimately, the acid test is, having got over the novelty of that experience, having demonstrated it to people in your friends and family group, right? Are you actually going to use that interface? Is it going to be something that you are going to download? Mm. I've got it on my phone because I use it to bounce ideas around, but I've tested that out before we did it today, but normally I use text as an input and I just get a text response. You know, I might ask it for, you know, ideas for a blog post or a newsletter.
And I can see why that would be good. And it saves you on brain power and it saves you time, you know.
Sure, but my question is, but are we going to chat to it? Like, after the novelty of that, is it going to be something that we really need and that we rely on, that we use every day?
Yeah, that is the question, isn't it?
And I would say right now,
No,
and
it's not.
Even though I was clearly loving that, and it blew my mind. Like, the way that she looped back towards the end and made a joke, I felt it was a joke about
my seven cats.
Yeah. I thought that was really clever.
No, I don't think that was a joke. I think she just lifted the information of and put it into things, facts about Susie Perry. I didn't find that as a joke.
So you think I was investing irony into that?
You're much more invested into it than I currently am.
Yeah, but even I have to be honest with myself and say that there are not very many scenarios other than just pure fun and showing someone, you know, on the train, that I would need that service now.
In terms of the conversational side of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. When you asked it to be Einstein, that for me was like a direct copy-paste. I think that was something easy that it could do.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
And equally, but then I would say that, but when you asked her to name, was it her favourite, or name the presenters of the Gadget Show, just the sentence construction was highly sophisticated. For me, that felt like it wasn't just a data scrape. It was a data scrape from numerous sources that was then passed through a highly sophisticated language engine and said with precision and a little bit of charm. And I might be introducing those to the experience. You know what I mean? I might be putting those layers on myself. And obviously, so much more sophisticated than we possibly have time for in a short interview. But hey, there you go, folks. What can we say? We have given you an artificial intelligent guest, one of the first podcasts in the world to do that. And I think it poses some amazing precedents and asks some huge questions.
Yeah, I'm always concerned about the policing of things, as always, and the safety aspect. But it was a nice little experiment.
Hell yeah.
Have you got a little treat for me this week?
Susie, I have. I'm not sure if it's a treat for you as much as a treat for me.
Oh, you've got yourself a treat. What is it?
Well, you know, on Christmas morning when you're excited and they think, oh, it's so nice and excited for me, when actually you're excited to see, you know, what you wanted to have, but you had to give it to your other half. This is one of those moments. I'd like to present to you the Avata, the DJI Avata 2, which is one of the latest drones from DJI. And it kind of bridges the gap between the very much entry-level consumer-grade stuff, like the Hover Air that we've tried the other week.
With John.
And professional FPV, first-person video drones that often are made bespoke, that can fly super fast and have amazing cameras on them. So this thing has an incredible 4K wide-view camera with a number of different cinematic modes at your disposal. I'm holding up a grey drone. It's about the size of a 7-inch single.
Yep, fair enough.
That's
yeah,
too much of a retro example.
Square, obviously.
A side plate, yeah. It's got, obviously, it's got four propellers, but they are guarded. So a very chunky plastic guard in a gunmetal grey around each of the props. And that's going to...
Can I hold it? Just
yes,
see
of course
how heavy
you
it
can.
Is. So light, isn't
it? The Avata 2, that's going to... enable you to take a few hits on trees and the side of a building or maybe a rough landing and hopefully not bend the props, which is often a thing that you do with other drones. The camera on the front, you can adjust the angle so that as you increase the pitch, as you fly forwards, the camera can provide you with exactly what you're filming. So what you film is what you see, and that's not often the case with an FPV drones. Sometimes these FPV drones will have one camera for the operator to see through a pair of goggles like these. This is the Goggles 3. This is their latest offering for DJI. I'll put these on my face in a minute. Not with the Avata 2. With the Avata 2, what you're filming is exactly the view you get as a pilot. And that can be quite critical if you're looping around a car, for example, that you want to film or you're trying to...
Get some detail.
Yeah, get a specific shot.
So who would you say these are aimed at then?
This is a prosumer and stroke pro model. So if you were going to offer clients a business where you can film their property or their cars, or you can film YouTubers or sports events, this will get you going. You're not going to charge the big bucks unless you get a much more expensive rig than that. But it's certainly not for amateurs, and at a price range that certainly puts it out of the grasp of a lot of people, it's going to give you a high quality experience, especially with this controller, the Motion 3 controller. This is their latest controller. It's like a sausage, like a large sausage with some buttons and a controller on the top and a trigger that moves forward and back. So that's to provide you with forward and backwards motion. It's going to provide people like me, so non-professional drone pilots, people that aren't used to FPV drone flying, with a good chance of getting the kind of motion they want with, a limited level of acrobatics and some of the more extreme forms of flying, rather than having to get, one of these sort of Futaba controllers, the two sticks that you need to learn if you want to go down the proper, FPV racing route. It's going to give you a fighting chance with relatively no skill level.
Okay.
So get it going.
Well, I was going to say, do you think you'd be able to fly it?
I've never even turned it on. So
just so you, if you're listening, we are in a converted warehouse, basically, with lots of steel girders, and the most... probably worst place you could fly a drone anywhere, apart from a broom cupboard. So I'm going to ask you to see if you can fly it safely around here.
Oh, my God.
So it's starting up. Jason's got the headset on, controller in hand. Oh. So it started up, got it flying around the room.
Let me try and go underneath here.
Underneath the table, where there are wires and... Ooh, good flying. Good piloting. Come over here and take some imagery over here.
How about that?
Yeah, how does it feel?
Feels absolutely amazing. I can't quite believe it. I'm going to go nice and slow.
Really intuitive to use.
Yeah.
So come to me. Come to me. And then, right, you'll have to go up now or down.
I'll go down.
I'm going to go through here. I'm going to go underneath the microphone. Wow. Yeah, you're doing such a great job.
And just to make sure that I'm making it clear that I'm not doing this by sight, I'm going to go into another room. So I'm now flying around another room and exploring it. I'm purposely going slowly in beginner mode.
Yeah.
On a beautiful sunny day here in the Gadget Show studio, podcast studio. And so obviously I don't know this environment, but I'm able to run around and explore it and fly towards camera and just narrowly miss the camera operator, Tom. And carry on flying back into the studio just by virtue of this incredible Motion 3 controller, these goggles 3, the latest innovation that is just about as intuitive an interface as I have ever experienced. And what I want to do, in order to demonstrate that it's that easy, fly it back and land it right next to me.
Okay. Can I ask you how fast that would go, obviously, in more of a pro mode?
So I honestly don't know what the spec is. But I know it'll go very, very quickly. It will dive and descend at considerable speed. And it'll also do acrobatic movements, all the while filming in reliable cinematic 4K. Let me just... See, I think landing it on the table might be too much, but I'll try and... It's all right.
So do you want to move it
back? Yeah, just fold it down and move it if you like.
Okay, put it on the table. Jason's going to try and land it on the table. Yep. Well done.
Boom!
Oh, that's amazing. I'm going to hazard a guess as you take off your headset there that you were pretty blown away by that.
Mind blown. I mean, that was absolutely astonishing. Very rarely does what a gadget designer, producer, manufacturer say about their product so concretely, you know, feel like that when you first try it. Everything they said, it's great for the total beginner. It's got the flexibility for the more professional flyer. It's really intuitive. Yes, absolutely. I just want it, and I want to get out beginner mode, and I want to hell it down a beach.
Yeah,
I want to film the surfers.
I could see that. And the other thing I learned was someone needs to put the vacuum cleaner around this place.
I think they need to sort it. It's blown up. It's made me a little bit sniffly, actually.
Not surprised. Right, that's it. That's the end of the podcast.
Oh, it's been another absolute corker. Thank you so much for joining us. All of your lovely comments and feedback on social media. And of course, I want to give a big shout out to our Patreon members. All of you are hugely important.
Yeah, and if you want to become a member, just hop on. And there's various different tiers and you can watch the episodes early. There's extra content and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, so please check out the Patreon link. It's on the screen right now or somewhere in the text below this broadcast.
Okay, right, we'll see you next time. Have you learned anything about me?
That you've got 7 cats, so you better get home and feed them.
That's true.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.